male and female sex differences, contraception, transgenderism. These are some of the topics covered in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, Ethics of Sex, From Taboo to Delight. You can find out more at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Ethics of Sex contributors include Issues Etc. guests Ben Mays, Tom Eckstein, and Richard Stuckwish. Ethics of Sex, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January.
The Bible tells us how good and pleasant it is when God's people live together in unity.
When you do not have people in America who believe in America's uniting founding ideals, you don't have America anymore.
Jesus, unlike any other individual ever in history, came back from the dead. That places Christ in a category with no one else.
Luther's great legacy is that we are beggars. We bring nothing. Simply to thy cross I cling.
Radio operators, commercial and amateur alike, just love Issues Etc.
The cliche, now an old one, about my generation, the baby boom generation, is they thought they were going to live forever. They thought a couple things, that every experience they went through in life was really groundbreaking. They were the first generation to do just everything that, well, previous generations had already done, but didn't spend as much time worrying or talking about it. What about that millennial generation, that generation that will live more of its life in the 21st century than in the 20th? Do they also deny death in their own way, in their kind of narcissistic, nihilistic approach to life? Greetings, welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Joy Pullman of The Federalist is going to join us to talk about millennials and death and a little bit of Hamlet as well. Dr. Ken Sherb joins us after that for part 50 of our series on Martin Luther and the Reformation. We're walking through Luther's treatment of the Sermon on the Mount. We come to Jesus' words about laying up treasures for yourself in heaven rather than treasures on earth. Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will be our guest on this Tuesday afternoon for part two of our series on the conscience. Today, four things that your conscience knows and four things that inform your conscience. Then Pastor Tom Baker joins us of Law and Gospel to teach a Sunday school lesson on Jesus calling Matthew in Matthew chapter 2. Joining us to talk about the millennial generation and death, Joy Pullman, managing editor of The Federalist and author of a recent column titled, Dear Millennials, It's Time to Face That You're All Going to Die, and a forthcoming book, The Education Invasion, How Common Core Fights Parents for Control of American Kids. Joy, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me.
As a millennial yourself, why do you say that your fellow millennials could use a little time staring into, as you say, the abyss?
Well, this really hit home to me recently this year when my uncle died right at the turn of the new year. And I realized from, you know, I'm a millennial, my family, my peers and my family and my friends, you know, are largely millennials. And we don't really handle death very well. And so when I talk about the abyss, I basically mean, you know, the great beyond, what happens after you die. And there's a long tradition in all human history of thinking about death, what its meaning is, what happens after death. And I think the frivolity of our culture is such nowadays that, you know, especially young people, but people in general spend more time running away from death than thinking about it. But I think that's bad because, you know, doing that is not only doing due diligence for a life well lived, but it also can help you prepare to have a good death. And when you reach that point, you will look back on your life and say, you know, look, this is something that I have spent doing what is the right thing, and I have something to look forward to now as I enter the great unknown.
You say that millennials are filled with trepidation and fear of mm-hmm. what, if not death?
Right. Well, I mean, I guess the real question there is, you know, what are your ultimate beliefs about ultimate reality, right? Because death basically forces us to confront the great questions about life. Is there a God? Is there, you know, and if so, is there an afterlife? What is this God like? So on and so forth. And so I see mostly young people like me running away from that question. You know, you see the polls about young people, the largest unchurched, unreligious, highest amount of nuns you know, people who don't declare any religion pretty much in American history. And that, besides my personal interactions with them, just basically reinforces the idea that we're running away from these questions because I think we don't really like what the answers are when we face them. We don't really want to have to face up to what the truth might be because that might require something of us right now.
You also say that just in terms of the culture, Western culture has brooded over the reality of death in some, well, some unhealthy, but also some rather healthy ways for centuries now. Talk about that.
Right. So my favorite example of this actually has to do with the play Hamlet, of course, from Shakespeare, because the title character is really kind of, he's kind of a prototype of millennial. He's very navel-gazing. He spends a lot of time talking about himself and even about big ideas. But always when it comes to kind of the crucial point of saying, there, you know, so what are the conclusions I'm going to take? How now will I live as a result of my thinking about all of this? He shies away. He turns into a coward. And I think that's what a lot of us do. We want to get the joy out of, you know, thinking, pretending that we're intellectual people, that we have big thoughts about ideas. But what we really don't want to do is have the moral courage to say, you know, based on these musings, or, you know, I should have them, I should follow, you know, my presuppositions about life out to their logical ends and see if I think that is really true, and so on and so forth. So we basically find ourselves in the situation of Hamlet, and of those of you who know, you know, his story, I think it's pretty clear that Shakespeare is telling us, you know, you live like Hamlet, you die like Hamlet. He dies at the end of the play on a bloody stage. And I don't mean, of course, that we're all going to end with, you know, our father-in-law, our father, our mother, and our best friend and our lover all dead on the, you know, the stage around us. But what I mean is, it's a tragedy for someone to live a life that could have been great, that could have been one of noble service of leadership. Hamlet is a prince. And he essentially squanders it despite all his good education and all the hope that could have been for his life. And so, I mean, so in the play and in a lot of Western tradition, we have many thoughtful ruminations on what life means. And I think just facing death helps us bring into perspective life because the contrast requires us to say, you know, at the end of my life, will my life have meant something? Will it have been worth the living? And if that's not true, then what should I change right now about my life to make it something, you know, that, you know, is worthy of death when I reach that point?
You say that Hamlet's fatal flaw, of course, is essentially narcissism, an extreme introspection. How does that apply to millennials today?
I'm trying to think of a nice way to put it. So basically, I think the nice way to put it is stroking ourselves. Sometimes when we think about things too much, we get all the good feelings about that, but we don't, again, we lack the courage to carry them through to their ends. But so Hamlet is a narcissist basically because he spends all of his time inside his own mind, basically enjoying that there, while really being a coward. There, his life is falling, you know, his country, his family are in dire straits. They need him to take decisive action. And what is he doing all the time? Soliloquizing. And, you know, so if you kind of compare this to the modern man or the modern woman, you know, our life needs us. Our families are crumbling. You know, you look at all the social science data and just our everyday interactions. Our families are in great need of help. You know, our communities are in despair and dying. And what are we doing? We're writing angry Facebook posts. Or for older folks, you know, they're shouting at the television about politics or this, that, or the other. I think, you know, it's time for us to stop being like Hamlet, spending time, you know, just venting our rage or just, you know, expressing our feelings in unhelpful, unhealthy ways. And time to say to ourselves, look, given that, you know, I think this, what am I going to do about it? If I really think it, that should require something of me. If rather than me frittering away my time, you know, in vain protestations to the air.
And the brevity of life, obviously, Hamlet is full of that. Life is just, I mean, he even says this, a little moment. But I have a feeling that the sense, the youthful sense of what do they call it? Not indestructibility, immortality, that's what it is, still sticks with the millennials as it did with every youthful generation. What do you think?
Oh, I mean, of course, you know, when you're young, and I feel that as I get older, it slips away and you start to say, I am, you know, I'm mortal. I can, you know, I can see the age already growing on my body, even though I'm still really young. You know, I've had four kids. My joints are creaky sometimes and stiff when I stand up. I'm sure not like an 80-year-old person, but you know, it's starting, right? And so, of course, that's the same thing for all my fellow millennials. We are getting older. We are reaching the point in our life where we can't really pretend that we're still young adults. And so then what? A lot of people complain about millennials, and I think, you know, there are some legitimate complaints. But I think a lot of our problems are the result of no one teaching us how to live. You know, no one has said to us, look, you feel young now and you are young and you probably aren't going to die. We're a really safe society, but you never know. And when death does come for you, whenever it does, again, what is your life going to have meant? Will it have been something, you know, that gave to other people? Will it have been something, you know, that lived in service to God and that was created into a thing of beauty by his hand? What is transcendent about your life? What takes it out of just the everyday, you know, the quotidian little things, you know, brushing your teeth, you know, what about it is going to basically be bigger and more meaningful? Is there any of that, you know, for you there? And so then we kind of have the choice to be like Hamlet, to stay muddling about in our despair, or we can choose to say, you know, no, there is something transcendent. There is meaning in this life. I know that it exists, and here's how I know it exists, you know. And ultimately, of course, what is the transcendent another word for? It's the word for God. But a lot of young people are afraid of acknowledging that because we are culturally conditioned to reject that as if it's not smart enough, when really it's kind of the most intelligent thing you could possibly do or think of.
I have to wonder about that because I'm quite a distance from the millennial generation in terms of years. But since
Good
you're
for
here,
you.
well, since you're, yeah, but I'm a baby boomer. This avoidance of death, that kind of nihilism, is that just the hip thing to do? Or do you think millennials have the potential to outgrow it?
I think that we do, but I think, you know, the twin temptations are either to despair or to pride. You know, so you can either think it's all dark, you know, I am going to die, it's meaningless, there's no hope, why bother? Of course, that is embedded in the Hamlet character, but so is pride. I don't need any of that stuff. It's all a bunch of fluff, you know, for idiots, so on and so forth. You know, you live once, so you might as well party hard, you know. So, and of course, as with most things, you know, again, this is an ancient bit of wisdom. The truth often is in the medium between these two extremes of either despair or pride. It's in faith. It's in hope. It's in charity. And so, you know, rather than despairing and saying there's no hope for me, or rather than being prideful and saying I don't need anything, you say I need something, but there is hope for me. And of course, since this is a Christian program, obviously I can say to your audience, we know what the hope is. It's Jesus Christ who came to earth, who said, yes, you know, that despair is true. You know, you have sinned. But he also says, you know, I've taken all that sin away and I'll give you everlasting life.
Why do you tell millennials that the good life really has nothing to do with their feelings? Why do they need to hear that?
Well, because their parents haven't told them it, even though it's a really basic bit of, again, ancient human wisdom. Look, from the very time you're a tiny little baby infant, your feelings are lying to you. And this is something, of course, Descartes, one of the famous philosophers of the Enlightenment, recognized. If you just think about it for half a second, you know it's true. You know, I've had tiny infants. They'll scream like they're being murdered when really they just have to go to the bathroom, you know. and grown-ups, you know, we have bigger things that we scream about, but they're still honestly in the grand scheme of things often is trivial. You know, I didn't get my shower, you know, at the right time today, and so I'm late to work, and I'm, you know, so I'm going to honk at the guy in the car next to me, whatever. So obviously, you can't use your feelings as a locus of telling you what is true, because they lie to you so much. So given, you know, that there are not reliable indicators of what is right to do, what is good to do, what's contributing to your society and to your own character, then you have to search for something else. And again, we're coming back to talking about transcendental, something that is outside of us, that is objective, that gives us a measuring stick for right and wrong, truth and false. And so we, in our age, we don't like to talk about objective truth, because that removes from us the power of saying what it is. And then that requires something of us that we have to conform to that truth. So basically we're, you know, we all want to be a little rebels. But, you know, basically, like you mentioned, that we all know where that path leads, because we're living in that age. It's nihilism. It's despair. It's nothingness. So you can either choose to submit yourself to something greater and get joy and peace out of that, along with the suffering that comes to every human life, or you can abandon yourself to despair and have a darker road, even though it may seem more appealing initially.
Hamlet's conclusion, of course, famously, is that life is, among other things, just a tale told by an idiot full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. Is that is he a millennial before his time? Is that the conclusion so many millennials are coming to about their lives?
Well, I think that is something that, you know, many think when they're being introspective, but I do see that as you mentioned, we're still really young, so we're still able to hide a lot of that from ourselves. You know, our bodies are in good shape, so we can, you know, we're not faced with our mortality physically. We're still young, you know, we're heading upward, you know, on the life curve, so we have our life before us still largely. And so all of those really kind of good, comfortable things help protect us from having to face these hard questions. And there's a danger in that, of course, because, again, you never know when you're going to die. You know, even though things are relatively safe, there are car accidents, and they don't discriminate by age, by health, you know, by social status. And so, again, no matter what your station in life, you know, at any moment, it will be a good thing for all of us to be prepared to die.
Joy Pullman is managing editor of The Federalist, author of a recent column titled Dear Millennials, It's Time to Face That You're All Going to Die, and a forthcoming book, The Education Invasion, How Common Core Fights Parents for Control of American Kids. You'll find a link to her book and columns at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Joy, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Ken Cherb is with us on the other side of the break, part 50 of our series on Martin Luther and the Reformation. We're walking through Luther's treatment of the Sermon on the Mount, laying up treasures in heaven in Matthew chapter 6, right after this.
Are you a homeschool parent looking for help teaching certain subjects? Or do you want your student to study the history, languages, and literature of Western civilization? Memoria Press Online Academy has live online classes with master teachers to help you. Their teachers have years of experience teaching, delighting, and moving students literally from all around the world. Your homeschool year doesn't have to be difficult. Visit MemoriaPressAcademy.com or call 877-745-8866.
What are some of the myths of gospel reductionism? I've written part two of an article titled Better Than Good, Failed Attempts to Improve on the Gospel in the latest issues, etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Joy Pullman of The Federalist writes about her journey from charismatic experientialism to confessional Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
O Lord, open my lips.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Make haste, O God, to deliver me.
Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live, weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.